Broadcasting.
Good afternoon. I'm opening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue. It's Thursday.
Broadcasting.
Good afternoon. We're starting again. This is the House Committee on Revenue, Thursday, April 22nd, 4 o'clock p.m., the second Revenue Committee meeting of the day. Before we start on our agenda items, will you please call the roll?
Representative Levy.
Levy present by video.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh is here by video.
Representative Smith. Excused.
And yes.
Representative Valderrama.
Excused.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham is present by video.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke present by video.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson present by video. Thank you. And I expect that one or both of the other committee members to join us shortly. We have two work sessions scheduled for this afternoon. I'm going to take them not in the order that the agenda was published. We're going to start with House Bill 3244. I am opening the work session on House Bill 3244.
Okay, good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Kyle Easton, Legislative Revenue Office. And yeah, just as a reminder of what House Bill 3244 is, again, this is a bill relating to an existing tax credit that Oregon has right now, and it's one of two auction tax credits that Oregon has. And in this case, this one is relating to the auction tax credit for film and video office. So just kind of a reminder how the auction tax credits work is that individuals make bids, and the Department of Revenue more or less administers the auction. They make bid for these tax credits. The money that comes in for essentially when a taxpayer purchases these tax credits are then used to support the film and video office or the OPIF account. And then the taxpayers are able to claim an amount of the tax credit they purchased later when they file their taxes. So as of right now, under current law, there is an annual limit, a fiscal year limit on the amount of tax credits that can be auctioned, and that is $14 million. And what House Bill 3244 would be to increase that amount to $20 million beginning on July 1st, 2021. And just as one last note, there is a current law sunset right now for this tax credit. That would be January 1st, 2024.
Thank you. Committee, for this bill and for the work session on the next bill, they are both marked for discussion purposes only. That's the way it was for the bills that we covered this morning also. It's a time to ask questions of Legislative Revenue Office, or if there is an expert or agency representative in the room with us, they may be able to answer a question. It's a time for you to discuss ideas. I think I've used the phrase before, kind of kick around the ideas, see if there are aspects that we're curious about, things that we think look okay, don't look okay, any kind of discussion is all right in this work session, but we're not planning to take any action on items today. So for 3244, committee members, it's your time for questions and conversation. Rep Levy, yes.
So in, thank you, Chair Nathanson. So in our Economic Recovery Committee, we also visited with the Oregon Film Industry. And one of the conversations we had with them was how they it was hiring practices for members of the BIPOC committee. Would these funds be used to help with those hiring practices, or could they be used to help with those hiring practices? or these tax credits, I guess.
Mr. Alanak, unless you have, unless you or Mr. Easton have some information for us, I'd like to call on Mr. Williams.
I think that would be a good approach, Madam Chair.
Mr. Williams, are you with us?
I am, Chair Nathanson. Thank you, Rep. Levy. The incentive program is connected to House Bill 3010, which is what you refer to, yes. In that House Bill 3010, though, there isn't any allocation of money for those practices directly, but it is a direct connection in terms of the policy that is addressed in HB 3010, yes.
One more question, Chair.
Sure.
So, being as I know nothing about how this bill works, never having, except for today, read it, how can we be sure that that's the way that will help that in that direction? Would we need to look at like an amendment or something that would help that?
Is that a question for me? Sorry, I'm not sure.
I'm not really sure, Mr. Williams, because in our Economic Recovery Committee, that was an important issue for the members of your group that came and testified before us. And I think you know that I told you I have some history in the film industry because I have a granddaughter that is in the film industry. And my son travels to all of her stuff, and he knows that most of that is union-led, and they're protected by the union, and they're required to hire so many members in the BIPOC community. But we never talked about how that funding would happen. So would these tax credits help that funding in order to meet those requirements that are already within the union members when they're hiring people behind the camera? We're talking strictly behind the camera. Would these extra tax credits be an incentive for the film industry to bring things in here that would help along with the other bill that came through our Economic Recovery Committee?
Rep. Levy, Chair Nathanson, the HB 3010, if it passes, only requires the productions to have a policy and then make good faith efforts to hire according to that policy. So there's no extra money that is actually allocated in HB 3010. It is just a policy document. These incentive funds, though, would increase the overall incentive, which would increase the ability for more projects to be here, for more hiring to come, as well as for more union members to be hired by those projects, just in an overall aggregate amount.
Okay, I think you answered my question. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Rep. Levy, any follow-up comments or questions? Okay. Rep. Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Easton, this doesn't extend the sunset. It's still the same sunset. It's just changing the dollar amount from $14 million to $20 million. Is that correct?
Yes, Representative Reschke, that is correct. This is just the annual dollar amount. There is other legislation in front of the legislature this year that would adjust the sunset, but it's a separate bill, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Alanak, this is sort of an interesting situation when there's another bill traveling along through the legislative process. Neither that bill nor this one is a direct allocation for a certain type of recruiting activity, for example, like recruiting fairs or something. But could you comment on that or anything else related to this bill that could help us understand what's going on?
Sure, Madam Chair. So I guess the process piece that comes to mind when we have two bills like this, the revenue impact statement work that we do, we try to reference the other bill because each revenue impact statement estimate, revenue impact estimate statement is in relation to current law. So if you have one bill that extends the sunset, that would have one revenue impact. And if you have another bill that just increases the allocation but doesn't extend the sunset, we can get into a situation where we could miss the revenue impact. So we keep tabs on both of them, and we might reference each bill. So each bill might have one of these revenue impact statement that says, if the other bill passes, the revenue impact is ABC. If the other bill doesn't pass, then the revenue impact is XYZ. Because moving, changing both policies in different bills, you can imagine how, as they go through the system, they could be missed. But those are the kinds of things that we keep track of. It's also one of the arguments for sending all such related bills to the same committee than there before. In this case, would be the Joint Committee on Tax Credits or Tax Expenditures that could review all of those at the same time so that the committee could decide if they wanted to extend the sunset for X amount of years and change the cap, perhaps in different amounts in different time periods. So there is that process piece to be aware of. One other comment I had was actually a response to a question at the tail end of the meeting last time. Rep Smith, and unfortunately he's not here, had a question about, I think he referenced like the hard numbers or the economic impact of the program. And we haven't, LRO hasn't done a report on this. It hasn't, for a variety of logistical reasons, it hasn't made it into one of our tax credit reports yet. But this is a situation where there are a number of reports. The Film and Video Office has, over the years, hired some local private sector firms to conduct analysis, various analyses on the tax credit. Echo Northwest has done a couple, NERC has done a couple, and maybe the University of Oregon, I'm not sure. So we have a series of those. So in response to the question and the homework that was provided last time, I went back and started thumbing through all of these reports to provide some sort of informative answer that may kickstart some conversation here. And the core question around all of these economic development incentives is this kind of but-for question: would this activity occur but for this incentive? And that's always a challenge to get at. The research work in general approaches these efforts from a macro perspective, taking a look at high-level data. The reports that are on the Film and Video's office website, over a series of them, they've gotten more refined over the years. And while we don't have an answer for that but-for question, they do have some statistics that show the amount of payouts to the programs compared to state taxes collected. And the estimates range from anywhere from 55% to just under 90%. So in that context, the programs don't quite pay for themselves in that sense. That doesn't include some things around like local property taxes, I don't think are included in that. And then I have some questions about how the authors made their estimates around state taxes, but that's some technical detail, but that provides some sort of idea of that return on investment, or do the tax credits pay for themselves? The one comment I would like to make on this, I noted in the report, and the most recent report is in the meeting here. It's in the meeting material, so the members can look at that when they have time, is that the philosophy of the program appears to be, and Tim Williams is in here, so he can speak to this much more eloquently than I am as the manager of the office, is that the goal is to attract some big projects with a focus or an eye toward building the local industry. Now, the without going down the path on the whole field of economic development, there are, I think, five waves of economic development over the past several decades. And one of them is this idea of business retention and expansion versus what used to be called smokestack chasing, which is kind of an odd term nowadays. But the idea, Bill, is to focus on the talents and the comparative advantages in the industry today. And I think Business Oregon has a slogan, grow your own, maybe. And that is an interesting approach. And as in my time here at LRO, the office has taken an incremental approach to the program, kind of going step by step, being very cognizant of this issue. So don't have that solid answer of the but for. That is kind of the holy grail of this. But I would encourage the members to read that report. And if there are additional questions, we can always come back and we can answer those. And I don't want to speak for Tim, but he's very willing to answer questions and engage stakeholders.
Thank you, Mr. Alanak. We have a question from Rep. Pham, and then I will ask Mr. Williams if he has any follow-up comments. Rep. Pham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, Mr. Alanak, I just had a quick follow-up to your question, your point about the return on investment in the report. Could you kind of pinpoint where we might be able to find that information? We mentioned some percentages, and I couldn't quite find it in the report with it in my quick scan.
Oh, that... there were a couple of tables there. It's a matter of comparing a couple of tables together, and I can send that to you.
Okay, wonderful. Yeah, if you can send it later.
And it's from a series of reports too. Like I gave you a range of 55 to about 90%. Those are from a number of reports. Within that report, it's just taking the payouts divided by state taxes. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Rep. Levy.
You may have answered this already, Chris. I'm looking at on the materials, and it's the green pamphlet that's 25 pages in incentive and impact analysis. Mm-hmm. Is that what you're referencing?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. That was their most recent report on their website. And I can actually, now that I'm thinking about it, I'll send the link to everybody so you can read the series of reports. There are a lot of them, and they get into some detail. And over time, you can see how they get a little more refined, still trying to work at getting that question. I mean, unfortunately, we don't have the solid answers to those questions, but it doesn't quite pay for itself in that sense, but there's a lot more to it than that.
Well, I've also noted that the direct labor income in Oregon residences went down by $30 million, roughly, since 2016 to 2019. And since I didn't have access to this earlier, do we know what accounts for that?
We do. And is Tim still in the room?
I am, Chris. Chair Nathanson, Rep. Levy. There's a drop-off, Rep. Levy, on those numbers because that was the year we actually lost two large TV series. We lost Grimm and we lost Librarians. And so both of those were actually, Grimm in particular, was a very large series that we were very lucky to have, 22 episodes over 9 months. I'm sure you know they don't make those anymore. They make 9 and 10 episodes. So what we've been doing since that time has been trying to recruit more smaller productions. So you'll see there's a little creep up in the next year. It goes up a little bit. Mm-hmm. So there's a big drop off because we lost two very large TV series in 1 year. And so we've actually been working to build that back up over time.
Yeah, I was so hooked on Grimm that I could not miss it. I would TiVo it and watch it. And my husband and I just loved it. It was one of our favorite series. I'm so sorry that it quit.
Us too, yes, Rep. Levy. Thank you.
Me three. Mr. Williams, could you please comment on, even though the members have probably heard it in your previous presentation, even though you would lose, for example, two large TV series in any given year, one might wind down, there might be another that's attracted. Could you mention to us, though, in addition to TV series, how many over the course of a year might be in Oregon for a while, but also what other kinds of activities? Because we know that the like stop motion and animation industry is active. People are filming commercials, you know, product commercials. So what other kind of activity other than we know a few series by name?
Chair Nathanson, thank you. To Chris's point about the but four, one of the things I think is very unique about Oregon is this idea of this kind of balanced system where over my time here, and that'll be 7 years in September, what I've actually tried to focus on is this idea of bringing in outside work that we might not have otherwise had, where we're competing with 30 other states to get that. In addition, to make sure the things that are already here and the producers that are already working here don't leave. And so I've always been looking at it from a point of of how do we balance that system? How do we make sure we have enough work for everybody that's here, and at the same time, we're building a local workforce that doesn't go anywhere else and stays here and works? So that's one of the things I always look at. In terms of the scope of the type of projects, I think the number that sticks in my head for the biennium 2017-2019, in our incentive program, we worked with 64 different projects. Now, that's not all of the projects that are working here in Oregon, because there definitely are commercial productions, branded content productions that aren't coming through us, except maybe to get some location contacts. But in addition, what Oregon has is a world-class animation community, as you also pointed out, that going back to the 1970s, we've had a stop-motion community that was started by Will Vinton, who created the California Raisins, for those of us who are old enough to remember that, and won an Academy Award for Closed Mondays. That has grown into an industry now that is easily somewhere in the $60 to $70 million range. We have four animated features that are here in Oregon at this time, and each one of those animated features will have a 2 to 3 year production cycle, and they'll employ somewhere between 300 and 400 people on each one of those. And Oregon is one of the only places in the world that is doing that much stop motion animation. So I'm actually quite proud of how we've combined our industry into this sort of holistic approach, meaning we'll get the Grimms, which are wonderful, and they're coming out of LA, but we also have Laika here, which is a homegrown industry that actually has grown a lot of other pieces of that industry around it. We also work with interactive gaming companies, so we have many in area. The most prominent ones are out of Eugene in your district, as well as one in Newburgh. We have several in Bend. We're also work with the commercial industry, and that also is a thriving industry here. And we also work with local branded content companies. So there's a lot of smaller companies in LeGrand and Ashland, and even down in Klamath Falls, that we work with to help sort of connect them to how do you get a permit here? How do you shoot in state parks? That's one of the things we do quite a lot, is connect people to that. So that is a unique thing in my mind to Oregon, is that we have a broad and sort of diverse in its content creation industry here. And that has grown since 1909, when the first film was shot here. But more importantly, it's grown since the 1980s, when Oregon was a stop for what used to be called Film of the Week programs. And we have a crew that is born out of that now. And we actually have 4 or 5 crews that work in Oregon all the time. Again, an unusual thing for a state that is not California, that is not Atlanta or Georgia, and not New York. So that balanced system is something that I try to focus on a lot.
Thank you. Committee, any other questions before we move to the next work session? We're still on House Bill 3244. I'm not seeing any other hands right now. Okay, thank you for being with us, Mr. Williams. Mr. Easton or Mr. Alanak, anything to add before I close this work session? Okay, I'm closing the work session on House Bill 3244 and opening a work session on House Bill 2819.
Okay, good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee once again. House Bill 2819, this is a bill that's relating to the Earned Income Tax Credit. The committee had a public hearing on this on March 2nd. And again, just as a quick overview, what the measure is doing, right now under current law, again, Oregon's Earned Income Tax Credit is connected to the federal tax credit, and Oregon's credit is a percentage of the federal. And because of that, and because of the administrative setup and design of Oregon's credit connecting to the federal, federal provisions and federal administration and qualification then flows through to Oregon's credit. And so one of the qualifications related to the federal credit and subsequently to Oregon's credit has to do with a taxpayer using a Social Security number when qualifying for the credit. So the change in House Bill 2819 would allow a taxpayer that would otherwise qualify, that otherwise meet all the qualification requirements for an income tax credit, but for the Social Security number requirement. So instead, the taxpayer is using an individual taxpayer identification number, which gets referred to as an ITIN to file their taxes rather than the SSN. In that case, where the taxpayer is using that ITIN in place or in lieu of the SSN, the taxpayer would be allowed to qualify for the earned income tax credit on their Oregon tax return. And the way 2819 is designed is that Oregon would be providing a credit that would be equal to the amount that taxpayer would otherwise qualify for at both the federal level and then for their Oregon amount here, which is a percentage of that federal credit amount. So Oregon would essentially be providing a credit that is in one way backfilling for the federal credit that the taxpayer can't receive, and then also providing Oregon's earned income tax credit, which is a percentage of that federal amount. That's the change in the base bill. It would apply to tax years beginning January 1st, 2022, and then through January 1st, 2026, which is the standard sunset that is on the earned income tax credit right now. We do have a couple of amendments that were posted as well today. Madam Chair, I can go through those now, or if you want to wait in the discussion portion to pick those up later, happy to follow your lead here.
If it's just a minute or two, we could do that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Madam Chair, so the dash one amendment is, this is specific to the new, I guess, expansion in 2819 to the earned income tax credit and allowing taxpayers that are using that I-10 to qualify. But so in instances where a taxpayer is using that I-10 in lieu of the Social Security number, the taxpayer will be required to provide proof of legal residency in the United States to get that this new proposed expansion to the credit that's in 2819, the introduced version. And then the dash two amendment, by contrast, would apply to both the existing Oregon earned income tax credit and then to the expansion in the introduced version of 2819. And it would basically remove the refundability portion of the Oregon's earned income tax credit. So again, the earned income tax credit is what we refer to as a refundable credit, which means if a taxpayer lacks sufficient tax liability to use the full amount of the credit, say they're scheduled to get they qualify for a credit that's $500, but they only have $300 in tax liability, because it's a refundable credit, they could reduce their tax liability to zero from $300 and then take a refundable portion of $200, which would be essentially like a negative tax liability. So the dash two amendment would basically disallow, in using that example, that negative 200 or that additional refundable amount of the earned income tax credit.
Okay, thank you. Committee, it's your time for questions, comments, discussion. Rep. Pham's hand just went up. Rep. Pham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I did want to just chime in as one of the chief sponsors of the bill, just to remind the committee about the intent of this bill. The intent of this bill is to address the problem that we have, where we have Oregon children and their families who are often working, paying taxes, often in essential industries like our farms, our stores, our homes as care workers, and yet they're not making enough to be able to take care of their family's needs. So this earned income tax credit, as we've learned in the past hearings, is about being able to address poverty and use this tool that we have to provide some cash to families who right now, after a really tough year of the pandemic, where they've been struggling to keep their jobs while keeping our economy going, and yet they haven't had access to the federal stimulus funds that so many other families have depended on to get their families through. So that was, I just wanted to remind the committee about the intent of this bill and help us to frame the discussion today. So.
Thank you. Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. Kyle, I know the amendments were just posted today, but I wonder if you've had any chance at all to look at the impacts of the non-refundability on an average allocation, if there's a way that we will be able to make an assessment like that, and an overall impact on the state's revenue picture, the bill's fiscal picture.
Yeah, Representative Marsh, so looking at Oregon's existing earned income tax credit, relating to, I guess, the dash two and the refundability piece, because that would apply to both the existing and the expansion of the credit. Right now in Oregon, or referencing 2018 tax year, about 60% of the earned income tax credit is used to reduce liability, and about 40% of that the remaining is a refundable portion. So what the Dash 2 amendment would affect that 40%, which again, if we're using a 2018 number of the total amount of close to about 45 million or so, that would be about $20 million in that year, that 40%. That would be no longer be allowed. In looking at the proposed expansion in 2819, I think we'd want to look a little bit more in how that would affect that group. Just thinking, because it is the group would be using the ITINs rather than the SSN in many cases, that taxpayer group may be a little bit different potentially than the overall earned income tax group that's claiming the credit right now. So again, that, and that's more to say that 60-40 split may not hold with the expansion group to the ITINs. At the federal level, because of the federal credit is so much greater, Oregon's again is roughly at this time, we're about 9% of the federal credit, or 12% if you have a child under three. So that comes out on average to about 10% overall. But at the federal level, about 90% of the federal credit is a refundable amount. So that's where, if you're talking on the 2819 expansion that's backfilling that federal amount, it would definitely, not allowing that refundability piece would affect those taxpayers to a greater extent, because Oregon would be backfilling for the federal credit amount, but much of that is a refundable piece. So there's going to be some interaction there. We'd definitely like to spend a little more time on how that would affect the filers using the ITIN.
Madam Chair, follow-up?
Sure.
So just to clarify, this would likely mean a 40% for people who have been receiving and using the EITC. This is on average perhaps as much as a 40% reduction in their benefit. That's a fair statement.
Yeah, Representative Marsh, in total, yes, that would, every taxpayers could be affected differently for sure, but yeah, on the average, that would be, yeah, 40% of it would be disallowed, I suppose.
Thank you.
Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I was the author of the Dash 2 and the Dash 1, but just so the committee has an understanding of my thinking is I had LRO do some work telling me what the tax expenditure was in 2017-19 biennium all the way through 2023-25. And we went from approximately $94 million all the way just on current trajectory to $126 million. And so, and that's with the increase in percentage we did last I think in 2019. So what I see is this tax credit growing, which may be good or bad. I'm not saying it's either. I'm just saying that it's growing. This, what I think, will expand it, obviously, and so it will grow bigger. And I think at some point we're going to have to put a cap on it or find more funding. And one way to do that is to change it from a refundable one to a non-refundable one. Another one would be to adjust the percentages. But I just kind of put it out there as a point for discussion, just so we're aware that this tax credit is growing at quite a big clip, and it's a big number in the overall tax expenditure package. So it's something we should be mindful of and continue to watch.
Thank you for your comments. Representative Pham.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. I just wanted to respond to some of Representative Reschke's points. To clarify, this bill, we're trying to expand the benefits of the program. We've seen through our hearings that this offers concrete benefits to Oregon families, and it offers economic benefits through multiplier effects of when people get these tax credits, they pay for it in their local stores, and they pay for it in their local economies. And so to actually cap it so that the poorest people don't get the benefit, and as Kyle was mentioning through Rep. Marsh's, would actually get a 40% decrease, would actually defeat the purpose of this anti-poverty tool that we're trying to adjust. The problem is not the cost, but that not enough people are actually accessing it. And we don't want to go backwards and try to undermine this anti-poverty program.
Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I understand that. I appreciate it. It's just that the state has so many dollars, and at some point we have to make decisions on, are we going to spend it on this or something else as far as tax credits? And we got a lot of tax credits in front of us. And so, again, I'm just bringing this forward to just be mindful, because it's the big one, at least in 2019-21 budget. It was the big item in the tax expenditure package. And so if it's growing at the clip and then we're going to expand it, then we're going to not be able to do other items unless our allocation of tax expenditure increases from the tri-chairs. So it's not to be mean to certain people or those who are receiving the credit. It's just more of a discussion point that we need to watch the expense of this overall program.
Rep. Valderrama.
You're on mute.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. I've never done that before. Thank you, Chair Nathanson. And again, apologies for the delay in being late here. I just wanted to respond and say that while, you know, dollars are certainly limited, that I do want to just lift up the underutilization of this tax credit to begin with, and that the expansion here is something that would be particularly important at a moment when recovery for those extremely impoverished are very essential in getting all of our districts and communities really up and running as quickly as possible. And I think really investing in those communities, especially now, is exactly how we should be spending our dollars. And so I do think to Representative Pham's comments and sponsor of this bill, and one of the reasons why this is an exciting opportunity for us. So just wanted to share that.
Representative Reschke has raised an interesting point about the growth in the revenue impact for this particular tax credit. For me, that then causes me to wonder, in all of the documents that we have from Legislative Revenue Office and also Department of Revenue about tax expenditures, do we have a place where we can see the proportional growth or comparative growth in certain kinds of tax credits? Some maybe grow faster than others. You would expect maybe in some areas the growth rate would mimic, I don't know, growth in, not sure what to compare it to, maybe income, maybe consumer price index, inflation, you know, what would we be comparing it to? But some tax credits may be growing faster than others. Is there anything that's showing that on something like a line graph or a bar chart or something?
Yes, Madam Chair. In our, I guess, the credit publication that LRO puts together for every long session, that is one thing that we definitely include in the credits as kind of a, it's usually a look back of the last 10 years or so for each of the credits that get included to look at the growth over time. In terms of a whole comparison document, and Chris may recall having put something together like this in the past, but nothing comes to mind that shows an entire time series of all the different credits, although this is something that we maintain certainly, and I know Department of Revenue as well. I would say one of the challenges there is when you start putting all the credits together, many of them have changed. The earned income tax credit is probably a good example, where Oregon in recent years has increased the percentage that Oregon is of the federal credit, which causes usually a jump up, an initial jump up, and then a leveling off. And so it becomes a chart that has a lot of annotations in it. As you see something that's growing, it's like, oh, well, here's another comment explaining why that happens or why that occurred. But that's certainly some information we could put together if that'd be helpful for the committee, and especially because there are some credits that are more sizable than others, and it can be more easily to compare those ones or how they're growing and such. But one thing on the earned income tax credit is there can be some underlying growth related to just adjustments to inflation and such related to the credit, and that's built into the federal credit and Oregon's credit as well. And then also there can be, again, Oregon's percentage changes, so legislative changes, but some cyclical changes as well, where we can see during periods where there's a cooling, say, in the economy, we can see changes in the earned income tax credit where that might be going, might be increasing as incomes are changing. And then as the economy is heating up or maybe performing well, we will see sometimes a flattening of the earned income tax credit. So again, to your point, Madam Chair, it can definitely be helpful to look at other outside indicators that could help kind of elucidate what's going on or what's driving the underlying credit as well.
Mm-hmm. So
it seems that also demographic changes over time, you know, as a population ages and some credits, or I'll just say tax expenditures. Some tax expenditures focus on helping families. Some focus on helping seniors. Some have to, just the demographic change from one state to another. Some states are getting older, if you will, and some are getting younger, or different regions are also. Rep. Pham, and then Rep. Marsh.
Sorry, I want to make sure I wasn't interrupting. Thank you so much, Chair Nathanson. I did have a question for LRO about the impact on children that this I-10 expansion would have, because I remember hearing about many U.S. citizen children who have an immigrant parent, for example. Then if there's just even one person who doesn't have a Social Security number, then the whole household doesn't get the benefits of earned income tax credit, even though they are themselves their citizens. And that we know that children who grow up in households that are receiving the earned income tax credit actually are healthier, they do better in school, they end up earning more as adults. So I'm curious if there's research about how many children would benefit from this EITC expansion from LRO, and if you have a sense also of the average income of the families that are receiving this earned income tax credit.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Representative Pham, that is some information we're looking into. So one of the things that we're working through and making the estimate of what the revenue impact would be is to look at Oregon's population of really tax filers or taxpayers, people that are filing their tax returns, utilizing an I-10, and then using that group as kind of our group that we can run some summary statistics and things like that on to get a better understanding to exactly those points. I don't have that information now. That's some of the detail we're getting into. We've been looking at the top line number of returns. But again, I think to your point, one tax return can look very different in terms of the number of individuals it's affecting than compared to another one, whether you're talking a two-parent household with three kids or a one-parent household with one kid. That can change in terms of how you count. Well, what's the number of people that are being affected or having a positive impact on after tax income in that case. But to your point, that is some things that we can begin to look at to look at the number of dependents that would be affected or on a tax return that would then qualify for this credit that aren't qualifying today or something to that effect. Yes.
Thank you. Follow up. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us, do you have the average income of the household? My understanding is something like 30,000, but do you have the actual data on the average household income of a family that's qualified for the earned income tax credit?
Yes, Representative Pham, we do have, and there's information that is published in the tax expenditure report and again in our credit report related to the earned income tax credit that is kind of the population today of what that looks like. Again, our step that we're working through is to try to look at the population that is not qualified right now because of use of an I-10 and whether or not that is representative of the overall population, because it very well could be different, that these populations are different, in which case we would want to make sure we give some of that information where the average income for this population that will be affected by the expansion in 2819 may not be the same as what's in the public statistics right now for the earned income tax credit. And that's the type of information we'd like, we're gonna try to put together for you, depending on the availability and such, to try to help give a sense of who's benefiting from the existing tax credit and compare that to who would benefit from the expansion in 2019.
Thank you.
Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. I just wanted to comment that this all feels like a really good warm-up and preparation for our review of tax credit expenditures that will come later in this legislative session. The importance of looking at what the objective of those are, whether we are achieving the policy that we set out to achieve, and whether it's the right policy. We know that that's always important, and this conversation really highlights that for me. I think there's clearly members of our committee here who believe that's clearly articulated for this particular tax credit. I think as we get into the exercise of review, we may find it's not as clearly articulated for some tax credits, and then you know, it's easy to pass on things without giving them the scrutiny sometimes that they deserve. So I appreciate the reminder that we should be ever vigilant around what it is we're trying to achieve in these.
Thank you, Representative Marsh. Next, Representative Valderrama.
Yes, thank you, Chair Nathanson. The comments from Rep. Pham made me think of privacy also in specifically in mixed status families. And so I'm just curious if the, Rushdie, you can share a little bit more about how the Dash One amendment addresses some of those privacy issues, and specifically if there's a definition of residency, both just in terms of tax codes and in immigration as well.
I guess thank you for the question, Representative Valderrama. My point on the Dash One was, I asked LC, actually, do we need to have a mechanism in this amendment on how people would do that? And I can send you an email that I received back from Kate Toswell and LC about how they currently do this, or how it's done elsewhere, and how Oregon could do this as well. And so if that doesn't satisfy your privacy concerns, and privacy is a big issue for me, then let's discuss further.
Representative Marsh, did you have a follow-up? Okay. Committee, any other discussion? Mr. Allenack, there are several things that have been raised, a few different kinds of points. Do you have any observations at this time?
I have been, Madam Chair, I have been taking some notes, and Kyle and I will touch base. I did want to throw out for the committee that while you were just talking, I did upload to the meeting materials to this meeting our 2019 tax credit report, which has a lot of detailed information on the earned income tax credit, not the Kyle can jump in here, correct me. I don't think it touches the I-10 issue. It's just on the base credit as it existed in 2019. So there's some basic information there that you could look into. And then I just wanted to add to, I forget who raised the question about the growth of tax expenditures and what you compare them to. And that is an important part, and that's part of why JTAX exists, to have those discussions. And that was also mentioned. With respect to the earned income tax credit, the structure of this, another thing that adds to some growth that can affect the growth pattern are federal changes. Our tax credit is just a percentage of the federal. So anytime the feds change it, then we follow along with that. That's part of our annual reconnect discussion. And the shape of credit, and I think Kyle touched on this a little bit, but just in case it's not visual for everybody, the shape of the earned income tax credit as income increases is that the value and the amount of the tax credit increases as income increases, and then it plateaus, and then it decreases. So that structure of the credit can lead to periods where it may not grow, because as an individual or their family, as their income improves, which hopefully happens over time, they'll have a period where they get more earned income tax credit, and then it levels off and it phases out. And that's tied to some other social policies. So all of those factor into it, but the growth patterns, but there can be some nuances to overall growth patterns that it would probably be helpful for the committee to get into when there's time.
Thank you. Representative Reschke.
Thank you. And what Mr. Alanak said, I think, is important to remember, that this isn't like the typical benefit where there's a cliff. It actually, it slopes down. And so that's kind of a ingenious part of this tax credit, is that if you get to the top dollar amount, you're kind of sliding down the scale as far as the credit, as opposed to just not getting it at all. And that helps folks kind of ease out from the credit and be able to sustain themselves with their new higher income. But again, if they fall back, then it's there to catch them as well. So it's a neat program. I really like it. It's just I'm a little concerned about the expense, but we'll get there, and I'd love to talk more about it.
Thank you. Any other comments, ideas, questions? It's about 5 o'clock. We started a few minutes late. Sorry about that. If you're all able to stay another couple minutes, we can take more questions. Rep. Reschke, do you have another comment?
I always have comments, but not this time. I just left my hand up, so okay. I apologize.
Anything before we close this work session for today? Trying to check down the list here. I'm not seeing any. Okay, I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2819. Mr. Alanak, what else do you have to tell us before we adjourn for the day?
Just to have a good weekend, and we will see everybody on Monday at our normal time. Hopefully next week we'll just be back to our regular, well, even the regular, it's kind of a weird, our regular schedule.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you all for a good meeting. We're adjourned.